Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 13th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good to you. Good, good. And we're also very pleased to be joined by our other frequent guest, Ms. Mariah Tinker. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, 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 good. Well, anyone who has paid more than passing attention to climate issues knows that this was a big week between the EPA and Scott Pruitt and the malignant stuff that he's trying to do. But we got to talk about it. We got to put it in perspective, and we got to get some insight about it. And in order to do that, what I'd like to do is go through a very brief 45-second history lesson, all right? In the year 2007, there was a case presented by Massachusetts, the Attorney General of Massachusetts at that time, in collaboration with other attorneys general, to the Supreme Court that insisted that carbon dioxide was, in fact, a pollutant gas. Right? It's a technical point, but carbon dioxide was not listed as a pollutant. In 2007, in something called Massachusetts versus EPA, the Supreme Court ruled that carbon dioxide is in fact a pollutant, a harmful pollutant, and that the EPA by law must regulate it. They must do something about it. Okay, so that was 2007. Soon after that, Barack Obama was elected, and the gears began to turn about what could be done based on this Massachusetts versus EPA ruling from the Supreme Court. Of course, initially, the Obama administration wanted to have a legislative solution where we capped carbon through some kind of cap and trade, yada, yada, yada. None of that worked out. Later on in his administration, Mr. Obama caused it to happen that a set of regulations were released by the EPA. And it went through several different iterations. There was one set of regulations that controlled how new power plants would be constructed, right? Very elaborate thing. And there was a second set of regulations that controlled how existing power plants would have to behave, right? When the EPA sends out regulations, it is a very long and complicated process. They have to scientifically prove there is a need for the regulation, the new rules of the road for operation. That takes years. They have to propose a regulation that is legally sound and is based in law, right? And then for the EPA, all of the EPA's actions were based in something called the Clean Air Act, which had been passed in the 70s and then reinstituted in the early 1990s. Long and short of it is the EPA proposed regulations for controlling carbon emissions in the United States that were somewhat akin to a cap and trade regulation, in that if a state had a coal plant inside its borders, they could offset that coal pollution by building some wind turbines over in the other part of the state. Now, that was a bit of a legal stretch, right, which I think was legitimate, but it ran into questions about whether or not the EPA could only write regulations for activities that happen, quote unquote, inside the fence of a power plant, right, within the boundaries of the grounds of the power plant, or if it could legitimately say that wind turbines built across the state were okay. Anyway, these fine legal points led to various challenges to the Obama regulations, which are known as the Clean Power Plan. And those attorneys generals from mostly oil states challenged the Clean Power Plan and finally got to Justice Scalia like the night before he died. And he let the Supreme Court put a stop to the implementation of the Clean Power Plan. Okay, fine, fine. That happened in 2015 or so. And then we got the tweeterer-in-chief elected. basically on the premise that he was going to roll back the Clean Power Plan. Now, it turns out the Clean Power Plan has been on hold since Scalia. Remember Scalia? Since he stopped it about 2 years ago, right? Nothing's really happened, but it still is the regulation of the law of the land. This past week, based on the bloviating orange one's wishes, tell me, D.R. Tucker, what did the EPA propose to do this week?
Well, EPA Administrator, and I use that term very, very loosely, Scott Pruitt, filed with the Federal Register a proposal to repeal and replace, if you will, the Clean Power Plan with the idea of having a weaker statute that would presumably fulfill the legal obligations to regulate carbon under the ruling in Mass versus EPA. This kicks off a long, potentially years-long process of public comment and legal challenge, which will ultimately presumably wind back up at the Supreme Court, which will decide ultimately to uphold or reject what Mr. Pruitt is planning.
Right, right, exactly. And I think that the, in some sense, the... Right. Scott Pruitt has said we're going to begin the process of revising and basically replacing these regulations that were proposed by the Obama administration. And I think in Scott Pruitt's head, he's saying, oh, shucks, I really don't want to do this, but I have to do it. Right. He's going to try and do the weakest possible regulations that he can. But all that has to be based on scientific fact, which is not on Scott Pruitt's side. And as you say, it offers many opportunities for legal challenge, which would, just as in the reverse, when the red state attorney general sued to try and stop the Obama Clean Power Plan, there are many opportunities for blue state attorneys generals to gum up the works as well, right? I heard Maura Healey here in Massachusetts is already planning on suing or has already sued. Is that true?
Maura Healey and Eric Schneiderman, the New York Attorney General, have said that they will sue the EPA once this process gets going of effectively trying to repeal and replace the Clean Power Plan, basically saying that Pruitt doesn't have the legal authority to try to water down the standard that was set by Mass versus EPA. I've noted before and will note again what appears to be the strategy of Trump and Pruitt. Maybe this is a bit morbid, but the thought process seems to be if they can somehow, between now and say 2020, because obviously if they lose control of the White House in the 2020 election, it's a whole different ballgame. But the idea is that somehow they hope that between now and 2020, they can get this to go all the way to Supreme Court and hopefully have the Supreme Court somehow reverse Massachusetts versus EPA and declare that the court got it wrong in 2007 and the EPA has no legal authority whatsoever to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which would be, for many, many reasons, a complete nightmare and a massive win for the coal industry in particular.
Right.
So just to jump in here, I listened to Gina McCarthy speak on this, and of course, she was largely participatory in all of this being set up and stuff like that. But she points out that it's this Clean Power Plan is not to pick winners and losers. That's how the Trump administration's been framing it. Oh, it's picking winners and losers. It's really some of the reasons that coal is failing. It has nothing to do with renewable energy. It's been failing because of natural gas, and it's just not as effective of a fuel. And renewable energy is more effective. It's more, cost.
Cost less.
Yeah, it costs exactly. It costs less, and it's the bottom line is it's cleaner. And she said that they're setting limits on the pollution the same way that we would set limits on toxic substances being dumped into rivers and so on and so forth. This is for our health. Of course, they presented this in front of the coal company and said, this Clean Power Plan is out to get you, coal industry. And, they will lose jobs. And that's certainly something that I think we need to make sure to help rectify with, reinvesting in those communities and finding jobs for them to get them back to work. But giving them false promises of bringing coal back is just not fair to anyone.
And you note that here in Massachusetts, we have had over the last 4 or 5 years a clear attrition of all of the coal plants, right? The Salem coal plant got shut down. The one at Brayton Point got shut down. Mount Tom has been shut down. So there's no coal power plants left in Massachusetts, which is, I think, symptomatic of what you're saying, Mariah, right? I mean, coal, there's no future for coal, especially in, you know, natural gas is not great, right? Fine. But natural gas is winning over coal. And the things I've seen say that the price of renewable energy like solar panels has fallen much more quickly than anyone had anticipated, and that it's essentially on par with other energy sources now. So really, the market forces that would somehow revive coal are simply not there. I agree.
Right. I mean, it's sort of like saying, let's stick with, you know, back when they had horse and buggies, let's stick with that so that we keep them in a job instead of using, you know, the Model T Ford. I mean, you gotta move forward.
I'm going to reopen all the Blockbuster video shows and say that.
Yeah.
I mean, the stuff I've seen talks about how the many of the power producers or the people who build the power plants know that the demands for carbon emission control, carbon pricing and whatnot, are going to outlast Trump and Pruitt. And they're thinking 10, because they're investing on a 20 or 30 year timeline. And they, these people who build the power plants are in the electric generation business, don't at all like the uncertainty that is now popped up. Because Pruitt, well, he said he's going to repeal the Clean Power Plan, just like with healthcare. I mean, there's no clear alternative, right? They have nothing in hand to put down and say, this is what we're going to do instead. It's all just, we're going to repeal that, and later on we'll figure things out, and we'll all talk about it in the great by and by. And speaking of talking about it in the great by and by, let me just point out that Scott Pruitt's actions will now have precipitated a long period where, or it should be a long period if these guys obey the law, where public comment will be called for, right? So all of us and every person in the country can submit commentary to the EPA saying why changing the rules is a bad idea, and part of our ability to influence these events is to provide public comment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And if you notice some of the coverage, even some of the people in the coal industry are a bit hesitant. They're not all that gung-ho about what Pruitt is doing. They want essentially a moderate version of the Clean Power Plan. They don't want all the regulations to be completely watered down, because what they're afraid of is that if Trump is out of office in 2021 or 2025, you know, every action creates an equal and opposite reaction. If you have a new administration that is going to be just as forceful against the fossil fuel industry as the Trump administration is in favor of the fossil fuel industry, the coal industry could be in a world of hurt. So they don't want a scenario whereby things seem to be easy for them now, and then in 4 to 8 years, things are hard as hell for them. So they basically want something that they can, in their minds, live with, as opposed to something that basically lets them off the hook for now, only to delay their inevitable demise, basically.
Right. One of my favorite terms that you use is the climate hokey pokey, and this is like the Clean Power Plan hokey pokey.
Exactly.
We're in, we're out.
Well, exactly. I mean, one of the ways that, and this is just sort of a vocabulary thing, one of the ways the Pruitt's EPA will try to justify different regulations is by changing the calculation of a number called the social cost of carbon, right? So the Obama administration had good faith, lots of experts trying to put a price on the societal impact of burning a ton of coal. And believe it or not, they came up with a number that said $36 is the impact that you should pay now for the damage that burning a ton of coal will do for the next 1,000 years, right? It seems pretty cheap on the face of it. But that social cost of carbon, of course, includes things like health issues. It, in fact, includes global damages, not just in the United States. It includes a lot of stuff. And what the Pruitt EPA will try and do is to change, and I guess the other thing that the social cost of carbon includes is this discount, or not the premium discount, but a discount on future investments, right? I mean, there's a bunch of numbers in it, and the Pruitt's EPA will try to make the social cost of carbon less, because that reduces the benefit, right? So they want to wash out all the benefit of reducing carbon and only focus on the cost to the economy as this justification. So as this stuff's going to go on for years, as we see this stuff, just watch out for that hot button word when they say social cost of carbon and trying to change that and the way they're going to do it. Just put your hand on your wallet, because they're trying to screw things up by cooking the books there.
As George W. Bush once said, it's fuzzy math.
Fuzzy math is right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and you know, one of the social costs of carbon, like just to emphasize, is people's lives, right? Like, you know, how many people are dying from air pollution deaths? And, oh, I mean, so they're just going to kind of push that aside as something that's important. That seems like a bad idea.
It seems a bad idea. It's a good reason in the future to write a comment to the EPA saying why this stuff should be changed. Because, yeah, you're right. It falls into asthma costs. It's all. And I guess that's the other thing that Pruitt's EPA wants to do. They want to decouple the damage and the health damages of burning fossil fuels, which would be, say, to me, cancers and particulates and asthma. They want to say, take that out of the carbon, the clean power plant, because it's not directly affecting global warming. And it's just another way they can cook the books by trying to take away, trying to reduce the social cost of carbon. I don't know.
And along that, I also heard that they were going to try and do it based on domestic rather than global emissions, that would also kind of tweak the numbers, where it would make it seem, because a lot of the social cost is going to happen not here in this country. Right. So if you take us out of that equation, it seems like a lot less as well.
Right. So, I mean, we'll be watching that with some care. Let me just switch context to a different hot topic. We need to comment on the fires out in California that are just ravaging mostly Northern California. But it's really, I saw Governor Brown on the tube earlier this evening saying how, I mean, he just said it. It's like, this is, I mean, he wasn't making an explicit point, but he said, this is the kind of behavior we expect to see in a warming climate. And he just included it as a matter of course. I think good on him. But I mean, the fires in California are really, really beyond out of control. I mean, it's a serious and a new kind of behavior, right?
I mean, did you guys see the pictures that showed, you know, this like cute, quaint little neighborhood, and it was just gone. There was nothing left. All of the houses were burned down to the foundations. Mm-hmm. Nothing left. I mean, you know, the pictures are just
stark.
Yeah, they're really stark. And it's how many people have died so far? Is it
15 or 20 people, I think.
Or 20. And you can see, you know, there's all this footage of people going back and sobbing because they have nothing left. I mean, all, you know, even people's safes that had, you know, their fireproof safes, the fire was so hot, just incinerated their safes. Mm-hmm. All their, you know.
I mean, it's ghoulish, right? But on the TV earlier, there were videos from Disneyland in Anaheim, right? And I've been to Disneyland, you know, everyone's been to Disneyland. And, you know, people are on the rides, and there's this orange smoke billowing up over Disneyland, right? And they're all sort of at the fair. And I guess it's kind of a metaphor for the United States, right? We see the smoke coming, and we're still, you know, looking to see what dance Mickey Mouse is doing. It's just, anyway. Well, our deepest condolences to people in California. We know that out there they're fighting the good fight. And these fires are horribly, and of course, these are just, you know, who can go through? There's the fires in California. We've already, Puerto Rico has almost dropped off the radar screen. I forget completely about the guy named Harvey or the woman named Irma that devastated the South. I mean, all that stuff is just gone. And it's hard work keeping up with the devastation. But our job is to not get hung up on whatever insult the president wants to hurl over Twitter, and stay focused on the facts that this stuff's happening. Right?
You know, just as a little bright side, you know, I can't remember his name. His last name's Stinnett, and he's with the Environmental Voter Project that was based in Boston, and he's been on this big campaign to get more and more environmentalists super voters to get out there and vote, right? That's an area that's lacking. And he's been seeing some success, and he's building and building, and now he's jumping into Georgia. And then he's going down to, I think Colorado and a couple of other states. And, you know, he's been quoted as saying environmental voters have the potential to overwhelm the electorate. So, yay!
It would be
Let's
cool.
Let's make a change.
I mean, we need to find a way to talk to that guy. Right. That would be an interesting conversation because, right, DR, you'd like to say something, some quote from a guy named Douglas. I forget his first name.
Frederick Douglass. Power yes. concedes nothing without a demand.
There you go. So we're going to go to the
And yes, Nate Stinnett has been very, very courageous in terms of what he's doing. And you know, definitely need that more of that engagement and activism as ever, as we're seeing quite literal fire and fury in California.
Yeah. All right. Well, we got to put it down there. We'll check out. You can check out links to most of what we talked about, although we covered a lot of ground. Most of what we talked about at the blog. It'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. And of course, if you want, you can go to the MCAN Facebook page at /massclimateaction. Click on us there. Get through to the blog and the SoundCloud link. And of course, you can learn lots of other interesting goings on the Facebook page. You can listen to this show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, lots of other directories. And, of course, you can find us on iTunes. So we will close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies... I hope you hear me, Mr. Pruitt, your reckless policies, the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks.
Mariah, thanks for making the time. It's great to have you.
Always a pleasure.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us, and until next time, be green.
Very cool.